We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
America is at a crossroads.
We're talking about November 5th. The consequences of this election are broader than even sometimes I grasp.
You only have two options, to vote or not vote.
AFA at Home takes a deep look.
Pray for fair elections, that God's hand is over these elections.
It all impacts you directly. Make your voice heard.
Don't miss this special edition of AFA at Home on AFA Stream. Visit stream.afa.net to sign up today. Stream.afa.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government.
I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is October 17th, Thursday. We are under 2 weeks away from, or about, well, I guess a little over 2 weeks, rather, from the 2024 presidential election. And the big news of the day, of course, is Kamala Harris's absolute train wreck of an interview on Fox News. And I just have to tell you, I did not make enough popcorn last night for how much of a glorious disaster this interview would actually be with Bret Baier. I knew Kamala would be terrible and she would just pivot to her, you know, I was raised in a middle-class family and Trump. Somebody actually did a supercut of how many times she just invoked Donald Trump and tried to bash him. But it was so bad in so many different points. And Bret Baier did an absolutely masterful job at pushing back and not letting her just filibuster her way through. As I was watching this morning for the third time, and it's just that glorious that, you know, you got to watch it multiple times to really get the good effect, like a good movie. When I was watching it for the third time this morning, it occurred to me that she treated the interview the same way she did the debate and almost expected that she could get away with the exact same thing against Bret Baier on Fox that she did with the moderators on ABC, because she treated the interview the same way, because she just filibustered and attempted to and really somehow didn't expect it. It appeared that she did not expect Bret Baier to actually push back. And there were a lot of conservatives and people on the right and, you know, people who are generally more or less Fox News fans, and then other people who really don't like Fox News because, you know, all the 2020 election stuff, and they just, you know, they haven't been fans since how Fox treated that whole era, if you would. And there were so many people that were saying, well, Bret Baier's a liberal and he's a leftist, he's a former Democrat, and he's going to treat her with kid gloves. And they all owe Bret Baier an apology this morning, I think, because he absolutely handcuffed Kamala Harris to the Biden administration record. And one of the best things that he did throughout the interview, not only interrupting and saying, well, no, this is my question, not allowing her to filibuster, but he kept saying your administration. Your record. He didn't say the Biden-Harris administration or the Biden administration's record to allow that little bit of perception of distance. He kept saying your record and asked her specifically what she's turning the page from, because she's been in office for the last 3.5 years. And when she's saying that she wouldn't do anything, she can't, nothing comes to mind that she would do differently from Joe Biden if she gets in office as the president, then he's going, what are you turning the page from? And she gave this kind of, you know, embarrassed little giggle and was like, ah, you know, you know what I'm talking about. And he's like, no, I really don't. And that was one of the best moments of the interview. But if you haven't watched this yet, absolutely, you should take 25 minutes, make more popcorn than I did. I'm just telling you, I'm warning you now, make a lot of popcorn and sit down for the 25 minutes and just watch this thing the whole way through. But it started off really contentious and set this stage because Baer asked Harris a very simple question on immigration of how many illegals she estimates that her administration allowed into the United States over the last 3.5 years. And listen to how she tries to just sidestep this with her platitudes and her vagaries, and Baer doesn't let her get away with it. This is cut one.
How many illegal immigrants would you estimate your administration has released into the country over the last 3.5 years?
Well, I'm glad you raised the issue of immigration because I agree with you. It is a topic of discussion that people want to rightly have. And you know what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, but
do you think it's
1 million, 3 million?
Brett, let's just get to the point. Okay, the point is that we have a broken immigration system that needs to be repaired.
So your Homeland Security Secretary said that 85% of apprehensions.
I'm not finished. We have an immigration system.
It's a rough estimate of 6 million people have been released into the country. And let me just finish. I'll get to the question, I promise you.
I was beginning to answer.
And when you came into office, your administration immediately reversed a number of Trump border policies. Most significantly, the policy that required illegal immigrants to be detained through deportation, either in the U.S. or in Mexico. And you switched that policy. They were released from custody awaiting trial. So instead, included in those were a large number of single men, adult men, who went on to commit heinous crimes. So looking back, do you regret the decision to terminate Remain in Mexico at the beginning of your administration?
At the beginning of our administration, within practically hours of taking the oath, the first bill that we offered Congress, before we worked on infrastructure, before the Inflation Reduction Act, before the CHIPS and Science Act, before the bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the first bill, practically within hours of taking the oath, was a bill to fix our immigration system.
Yes, ma'am. It was called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021.
Exactly.
It was essentially a pathway to citizenship for the...
May I finish responding, please?
But
you have to let me finish,
you
please.
Had the White House and the House and the Senate,
I'm
and they
the
didn't bring up that bill.
I'm in the middle of responding to the point you're raising.
Okay.
And I'd like to finish.
Yes, ma'am.
We recognized from day one that to the point of this being your first question, it is a priority for us as a nation and for the American people. And our focus has been on fixing a problem. And from day one, then, we have done a number of things.
No, she didn't answer the question. She didn't say how many illegal immigrants have crossed the border in her estimation. She didn't actually specify anything that her administration has practically done for any of these solutions. She's just spouting vagaries. And notice how she is trying to filibuster by saying, you know, from day one of taking the oath, even before we did XYZ, you know, QPT things. I mean, she kept trying to just add and fill time to all of these things and not answering the question. And Brett knows that he only has about 20 minutes with her at this point, because according to his reporting afterwards, she and her team showed up about 15 minutes late. They were scheduled for a 30-minute sit-down, and so he was already running out of time because they were saying, oh, we're only going to give you 20 minutes. So it kept being narrowed and narrowed. And so if she just tries to filibuster her whole way through, he's not going to get to all of his questions, and he's not going to be able to push back and make her answer the questions or clearly show that she's not answering. So I think that in that format of an interview, I mean, this isn't a debate where moderators need to kind of sit back, ask the question, and then let the candidate say just whatever they want with the time that they have, or maybe go back and forth and challenge each other. This is an interview. This is something where, of course, he can interrupt. And that was the very first question. And she's going, you know, the fact that this is the first question just shows how much of a priority it is. And we've put this as a priority. Well, how exactly, Kamala Harris? And I don't know if all of you have seen this report from Real Clear Investigations. This is shocking. Just speaking of illegal immigration, and I wish that that Brett Baer had actually brought this up yesterday, because the FBI, now according to this Real Clear investigation report, has shown that the FBI stealth edited their crime stats for 2022. And what stealth editing means is that it's not this like announced, hey guys, we got this wrong, we're updating our numbers and we want to draw your attention to this to make sure that everybody's very clear on what the facts are. They just edited it hoping that nobody would notice. And this shows exactly the reason why Americans have no confidence in our government and that institutions like the FBI have been captured, because this, of course, benefited the Democrats this election cycle. The updated data, and listen to this, for the 2022 crime report is that there were over 80,000 more violent crimes in 2022 than 2021. This included an additional almost 1,700 murders, almost 8,000 rapes, 33,000 robberies, and 37,000 aggravated assaults. And this is just from 2021 to 2022. I mean, I can only imagine when we actually get to what the data is for 2023 and 2024, it's going to be up even more. And this benefited the Democrats because they've been running this whole time on don't believe your own feelings of safety. Don't believe anything that you actually see on the news that's reporting some of these facts, like all of the crimes that have happened and the murders of, unfortunately, these several young women like Lake and Riley. Don't believe that. Let's fact check you. And in fact, David Muir tried to fact check Donald Trump in real time with this now defunct data during the presidential debate. And is ABC going to issue an apology now? Is anybody, all the millions of Americans and the voters that tuned into that debate, are they now going to be like, oh, wait a minute, this was wrong data, so Trump actually got this right when he said that there was fraud in this report? And this just shows that Americans are being gaslighted, that crime is down under Harris's administration, when it's actually up 4.5% and probably, like I said, more by now. And there was a really terrible moment in the debate as well when Brett Baer asked Kamala Harris directly and played a clip from one of the mothers of these young women that were murdered by an illegal immigrant that you'll recall former President Bill Clinton even said on the campaign trail, you know, probably wouldn't happen to Lake and Riley, different murder, unfortunately, if they had been properly vetted. And he said, do you owe this mom an apology? And listen to what she has to say. This is cut six.
Madam Vice President, it was a policy decision in the early part of your administration. I will let one of the mothers talk about it. Take a listen.
Because of the Biden-Harris administration open border policies, catch and release, they were enrolled in the Alternatives to Detention program. This meant that they were released into the United States. It was not even a full 3 weeks later that they would take my daughter Jocelyn Nungaray's life. I believe the Biden-Harris administration open border policies are responsible for the death of my daughter.
That's the early days. So do you owe them an apology is what I'm saying?
I will tell you that I am so sorry for her loss. I am so sorry for her loss. Sincerely. But let's talk about what is happening right now with an individual who does not want to participate in solutions.
That was such a cringeworthy moment, saying, you know, I feel terrible, but... That is disqualifying right there. And this is exactly why the number one issue in the 2024 election is the border. Because Americans know that we do not feel safe under the current administration. And when Brett Baer is asking her directly, what are you doing about the border? How many illegals do you estimate? Do you owe these parents who their daughters have literally been killed because of the lack of vetting and the open border policy that changed on day one when the Biden-Harris administration, her administration, reversed Trump's Remain in Mexico policy? Do you owe them an apology? She just pontificates a little bit and goes, you know, yeah, I feel terrible, but, and then she goes on to campaign. That showed me very directly that she doesn't actually care about this. And we knew that. But that moment, to me, was one of the most significant moments to show that she absolutely does not care. She is trying to just filibuster her way through and gaslight the American people. She doesn't want to actually change anything. She's not going to be better on the border like she's campaigning. And she also doesn't want a new way forward. Bret Baier asked her specifically about the Americans, the over 50% of Americans that believe that under Harris's own administration, America is on the wrong track. And listen to what she had to say when he confronted her with those statistics. This is cut two.
The people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them. Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on.
Madam
Vice
President.
You and I both know what I'm talking about. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade, people have become. But listen.
She had no response to that. I mean, 79% of people. That's a lot of people in America know that this country is on the wrong track. And I've been saying for months now, this election comes down to worldview and what each of these candidates and their respective parties believe is the legitimate exercise of the powers of government. And what she was clearly saying to Bret Baier last night is that she doesn't care. She wants to transform America fundamentally, continue the open border policy. She's not turning the page from anything. And he's saying, you've been in office the last 3.5 years. What are you turning the page from? She had no response because there isn't a response to that. Of course, she's going to be a continuation of the Biden presidency. And she tries to say, well, I'm not Joe Biden. Well, of course, she's not actually Joe Biden. But in terms of her worldview, her philosophy and how she wants to fundamentally transform America, she is actually worse. If we're turning the page from Joe Biden, it's actually to a deeper, darker chapter under a Kamala Harris administration because she has no solutions. And at the very end of the interview, she tried to just point Americans who actually want to hear about her policy since she can't articulate it in the 25 minutes she was given on a Fox News interview to her website and says, oh, there's over 80 pages of stuff that, you know, I think is accessible to the American people. I'm thinking, oh, really? You're wondering if we can grasp some of the policy things that somebody put on your website that she probably doesn't even know are included on the website. And that's what you're going to do is spend 25 minutes in an interview filibustering and then point people to your website and say, oh, go listen to my policy there while she continues to invoke the name of Donald Trump. But clearly, this is what her aides prepped her for in this interview was to just go on the offensive against Donald Trump because this was a Fox News interview. And it seemed very clear that her intention in this interview was not to try to win votes for herself and convert anybody who was listening to this interview to vote for her, but to simply try to have a very bad impression of Donald Trump. And so my favorite part of this, my absolute favorite part of how badly she botched that strategy was when Baier asked her about the sex changes for prisoners and that requirement that prisoners can, you know, when they qualify, get sex change surgeries that are taxpayer funded. And she actually argued that Donald Trump followed the law for his entire administration. And she kind of catches herself and says it without directly saying it, but that was exactly where she was going. And I was laughing because their entire premise of her campaign has been that Trump is a threat to democracy and he's not qualified. And now, you know, they're saying that somehow he has mental issues while she's not even answering her own lies in covering up Biden's obvious cognitive deficiencies for the last 3.5 years. But their whole point was that, you know, oh, Trump doesn't care about the Constitution, doesn't care about the law. And then she's sitting there in response to this, trying to attack Trump by saying, oh, he followed that same law. He followed the law in the administration. And then she catches herself and I think her aides are probably literally fainting in the background, going like waving their hands. And Brett Baer was saying at the hard wrap at the end, when he's talking on Fox later about how the interview went, saying that her aides shortly after that were waving their hands saying, oh, we got to cut, we got to cut, we got to cut, because she's not even going on the offensive when trying to invoke Donald Trump. She was actually advocating that he followed the law for his own administration. And if that is not one of the Trump campaign's super ads, then I'm going to be very disappointed in the campaign. But the whole thing was an unmitigated disaster. And when she talks about a new way forward, listen to this last part. This is cut three.
Your campaign slogan is a new way forward, and it's time to turn the page. You've been vice president for 3.5 years. So what are you turning the page from?
Well, first of all, turning the page from the last decade in which we've been burdened with the kind of rhetoric coming from Donald Trump that has been designed and implemented to divide our country and have Americans literally point fingers at each other. Rhetoric and an approach to leadership that suggests that the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down, instead of what we all know, the strength of leadership is based on who you lift up.
Well, we'll be talking much more about this train wreck when we come right back with Todd Starnes here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Why, if he's as bad as you say, that half of this country is now supporting this person who could be the 47th president of the United States, why is that happening?
This is an election for president of the United States. It's not supposed to be easy.
I know, but
it's not supposed to be. It is not supposed to be a cakewalk
for anyone. So are they misguided, the 50%? Are they stupid?
What is it? Oh, God, I would never say that about the American people. And in fact, if you listen to Donald Trump, if you watch any of his rallies, he's the one who tends to demean and belittle and diminish the American people. He's the one who talks about an enemy within, an enemy within, talking about the American people, suggesting he would turn the American military on the American people.
She sounds hysterical. And as a woman, I can say that without claims of sexism. She genuinely started sounding hysterical. But this is, of course, Kamala Harris's interview with Brett Baer on Fox last night. So let's welcome in Todd Starnes, who is the host of The Todd Starnes Show. And you can follow all of his news and commentary, toddstarnes.com. And Todd, this was just a train wreck. I'm so looking forward to your commentary. What'd you think?
Yeah, look, this was a disaster for the Harris campaign, and I think the bigger story here is the Harris campaign trying to get out of the interview. Brett Baer said in the post-op that the campaign had agreed to a 30-minute sit-down. She showed up 15 minutes late, and they were ferociously trying to end the interview. I mean, even the campaign knew how bad Kamala Harris had done here. And Jenna, the whole point of this interview was to somehow convince Republican voters that she is a better candidate for the job than Donald Trump is. That's why she went on Fox last night. So delusional to think that interview was going to move the needle. I think this actually hurt her worse among independent voters.
Yeah, I agree. And while there were a lot of comments on social media and all of the pundits, of course, last night following the interview saying it was bad, but it probably doesn't move the needle. I think where it moved the needle is that some of the Republicans and independents who were considering leaving the top of the ticket blank and just voting down ticket, I think after this interview, because they're the more likely to be Fox News viewers and conservative viewers, they're going to say, well, wait a minute, maybe we just need to go ahead and vote for Trump because she was that bad. And I think that's actually where she lost votes, because more people now who might have sat it out or doing a write-in candidate are now going to vote Trump. Do you agree with that?
There were a couple of things that happened yesterday that I think are really important to what's going to happen on Election Day. If you believe the Democrats, the most pressing issue for American women is abortion. However, yesterday, President Trump held a town hall in Georgia that was hosted by Harris Faulkner of Fox News, and it was mostly a female audience. The point of it was female voting issues. And every single lady, and there was a huge crowd there, every single lady raised her hand saying that it was actually the rise of transgenderism that was the pressing issue, and especially men that are now competing in women's sports. So I think that's very interesting when you look at female voters and what might be driving them to the polls. The other thing is that Kamala Harris refused to take any responsibility. She refused to apologize to the families of American citizens who have been killed on American soil by illegals. And I think that was a devastating response she gave, basically blaming all of this on Donald Trump.
Yeah, I agree. And we played that sound in the last segment, so I won't repeat it here. But I also thought that it was a very callous response when she's saying, you know, I feel so sorry. And it, when Brett Baer asked her directly, you know, if she would apologize to these families, and she goes, you know, I feel so sorry, but let's talk about, I mean, she used that particular language to pivot from the devastating impact this has had on American families to just then start campaigning again. And it showed the utter callousness of her indifference toward Americans that have been impacted. And border security is the number one issue in at least, you know, it was the exit polls in the primaries, in a lot of these polls that are showing what Americans genuinely care about. And then she can't even answer that. And she also couldn't answer in the very first question, Todd, about how many illegals she estimates came in under her administration. And I thought that Brett Baer did a phenomenal job just handcuffing her to her own record and not letting her kind of push back and say, well, this is Biden's administration. And listen, he's not on the ballot. Doesn't matter. This is a new way forward. He asked her, you know, what are we even turning the page from? You're the one who's been in the office for the last 3.5 years. And she had absolutely no response. And so then some of the comments afterward, of course, from Democrats were trying to say that this was an ambush of an interview. I mean, these are questions that any sane journalist that has been paying attention at all for the last 3.5 years, we could have all easily predicted would be asked. I mean, so they're actually trying to claim this was an ambush?
Well, I think one of the challenges in the interview was that there really was just not a lot of time. And there are so many other questions that need to be addressed. I know that Brett Baer mentioned that in his post-op of the interview. And the reality is that she is refusing to sit down with pretty much any major news publication for that sort of long-form interview where they just don't tolerate the stonewalling and the filibustering, which is what she was doing yesterday. And they intentionally did that by showing up 15 minutes late for the actual interview. But again, when you look at, for example, President Trump speaking to the Economic Club of New York, New York City a few weeks ago, just a few days ago, he sat down for a Q&A with the executive editor of Bloomberg at the Chicago Economic Club. Kamala Harris is getting the same interviews to do these in-depth interviews on the economy. And Jenna, I think it's incredibly important for us to notice that she's turning down these interviews. And the reason why is, and I don't mean this in a flippant way at all. I truly don't. This woman is not intelligent about economic issues. And I'm not even sure she can make change down at the Walmart. That is a serious issue. When you look at the polling data showing the number one issue for most Americans now is inflation and the fact that many Americans are struggling just to buy groceries every week.
Talking with Todd Starnes, who you can follow all of his news and updates at toddstarnes.com. So you don't think that Kamala's aides are going to let her go on Joe Rogan now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. He's not a Trump guy. And a lot of people have been snookered by Joe Rogan. I am proud to say I was not one of them. And that's been a big challenge during this election cycle. You have a lot of people either pretending to be conservatives or grifters. And that is, you know, that's something that's been a big, big challenge for a lot of people. And especially with some of the allegations coming out about Tim Walz that are completely unfounded. I think everybody has to step back. You've got to be very careful where you get your news. If it's not on American Family Radio, it's probably not true. That should be the guiding light for most of us as we walk through this election cycle.
I could not agree more, and this is why we are here on the American Family Radio Network. And Todd Starnes, I also want to get your response to the question about when did Harris know that Joe Biden was not actually fit and competent for office? Because this is the question that I think a lot of us have wanted Harris to be asked directly. Of course, the moderators at ABC didn't ask her that during the debate. And her campaign has tried to say, well, Joe Biden's not on the ballot, so it doesn't matter anymore. But of course it matters, because this goes to her truthfulness. It goes to how much she's willing to cover up for political gain. And her response was just that. She tried to deflect. Listen to this. This is Cut 5.
But you call Donald Trump.
You call Donald Trump.
He's misguided. You say now
he's unstable. He is unstable, Brett.
He's not well. You say he's mentally not stable.
He's not stable.
Let me ask you this. You told many interviewers that Joe Biden was on his game, that ran around circles on his staff. When did you first notice that President Biden's mental faculties appeared diminished?
Joe Biden, I have watched from the Oval Office to the Situation Room. And he has the judgment and the experience to do exactly what he has done in making very important decisions on behalf of the American people.
Joe Biden, no concerns raised?
Joe Biden is not on the ballot.
I understand.
And Donald Trump, after George Clooney said within a few minutes of talking to President Biden at a fundraiser
that he thought this was not the same Joe Biden that we saw on the debate stage.
Donald Trump is on the ballot.
I understand.
Todd, your thoughts.
Well, Joe Biden was on the ballot and he was removed from the ballot. And I think the American people deserve to know why. And to your point, I think there's also an integrity issue here that Kamala Harris actually, and a character flaw, Kamala Harris put her own political career ahead of what was good for the country. And I think that's the bigger issue. And she has yet to be called. I mean, fortunately, Brett Baer called her out on it, but she really has yet to explain herself. This country has been put in grave danger as a result of the feebleness of President Biden. And that's a big problem. I mean, we are on the verge of war breaking out in just a moment's notice in the Middle East, Ukraine, Russia, Iran. You've got China and Taiwan. This is a very dangerous world, and a very good argument can be made. It's because of weak and feeble leadership coming from the White House.
And that includes Kamala Harris. And you're absolutely right that, you know, she's trying to just say, you know, it doesn't matter anymore because Biden's not on the ballot anymore. But he's been in office for the last 3.5 years and she's been right there. And to your point earlier, Todd, that, you know, she can't really articulate policy at all. And I don't buy that, you know, she's one of these really smart individuals. She's just trying to not get snookered by these ambushed interviews. And that's why she's pontificating so well. One of my favorite moments, speaking of the conflicts in the Middle East, is when Brett Baer asked Harris about Iran and the threat that it posed to Israel. And her response was, at every time that Iran posed a threat to Israel, I was there. Like, listen to this. This is Cut 9.
A number of experts thought you would say China. The FBI director had said that. But you said Iran. If that's the case, what do you say to critics who look at the actions of your administration and say you're not acting like Iran is the number one threat?
Well, I will tell you most recently, whether it was in April or in October, in the several hours on each occasion that Iran posed a threat, to Israel. I was there.
Oh, she was there. Okay, great. You know, I mean, is she actually the new potted plant for the Democrats?
Well, so is that plate of cookies that nobody ever eats on the table. Isn't that always a weird thing? You know, it's like you're in the middle of an international crisis and somebody had the wherewithal to put a plate of fresh cookies down. Yeah, I mean, it's a great point you raise. All right, so what? You were there. What, you know, what did you do? And the issue is, it's the policies. The policies of this administration led to this really international free fall we are in. America is no longer the leader of the free world. And when that happens, you get chaos globally. And that's really what we're dealing with. And I think it's something that President Trump is going to be able to come in pretty immediately and fix. And I have no doubt about that.
So in the last few minutes we have with you, Todd Starnes, and I so appreciate your commentary and your time here. Where do you see the election going? I mean, you know, we're a little over 2 weeks away. The polls are so close. I mean, nationally, this is within the margin of error. Obviously, Trump is up now in all of the swing states, and even the actual betting averages show him up. I think it's 5 or 6 points now, which is significant. Do you see the campaign in the last couple of weeks actually being able to convince the American people that this is not just about personality, this is fundamentally about safety, security, and the issues that Kamala Harris clearly has no understanding or comprehension of what to do about it? If she's just saying, well, you know, I'm present.
Yeah. Look, I'm feeling pretty good about the election. I don't believe any of the polling data out there. I mean, I think it's helpful. It gives you a little bit of an idea, but I find it very hard to believe that this race is anywhere near as close as the polling data would suggest. So yesterday, early voting started in Tennessee. I went out to vote yesterday, and in some polling places, it was almost 90 minutes that people were waiting. Huge turnout, record turnout in Georgia. And I think that's really what we have to do. The mindset has to be too big to rig. That means every conservative has to get out and they have to vote. They have to vote. And if we can do that, I think we win, and we win big. When you look at black voters, and especially black male voters, and I wrote a piece in Town Hall and that was published yesterday, the idea that Kamala Harris coming out and saying that basically with her plan, her bribe to black men, $20,000 loan that is forgivable, and legalizing marijuana, she seems to have this idea that black men in America just sit around the barbershop smoking joints and they don't pay their bills. That is grossly offensive. Some could even make the argument it is racist. I don't think she moves the needle with black men in America because they understand that this party has pandered to them. And so I'm feeling good about it. And I've just this entire election cycle, Jenna, I know a lot of our colleagues have been freaking out over this, but I just feel very hopeful about what's about to happen on Election Day.
Well, that's definitely positive going into November. What about the recent Barna survey that said that about 35 million evangelicals are planning to stay home? I mean, that's a significant number.
Let me tell you what happened yesterday in Memphis. There's the black church community here is very involved in Democrat politics. One of the churches actually got buses, and they brought their entire congregation to the polls yesterday. Jenna, that's what used to happen back in the colonial time when people would go to church first and then they would go and vote. The problem here is that evangelical churches are to blame for the current condition of our country because many of them have disengaged. They are not talking about these issues from the pulpit. And that's one of the reasons why we have so many woke evangelical churches now. So, look, when Christians don't engage the political process, bad things happen in this country. The reality is, Jenna, if all of those people who you just mentioned in that survey, if they go out and vote and they vote their values, well, Donald Trump goes to the White House. It really is that simple. So I would really encourage people to get out there. And you're right. That's one of the factors here, one of the great unknowns. Will Christians get out to vote? And I understand the party platform, and I'm just as upset as everybody else is. But, Jenna, that's not a fight for right now. We can fight that battle later. Right now, we got to save the country from the Marxists. And if Kamala and her team get in, they're going to be shutting down churches before too long.
Wise words, Todd Stearns. Always appreciate your time. And you can follow him on X and also go to toddstearns.com. And this is why this is a battle of worldviews. And it's not just about the top of the ticket, because if evangelicals fail to get out and vote, if pastors are failing to talk from their pulpits about the issues of the day, about morality, about truth, and about Christian engagement in civil government and how we live our Christian lives, then we will see some of these other initiatives that are on the ballot perhaps pass in some of these states, like abortion regulation and the so-called right to abortion being cemented into state constitutions. Election integrity is on the ballot. If you missed yesterday's program, Cleta Mitchell dropped by to talk about all of the states that have these election integrity measures on the ballot, some of them good, some of them that need to be defeated. You can go to votefair2024.com to look at those issues. You can also go to AFA Action to see our voter guide on the issues in critical states when we're talking about voting our values. So always appreciate Todd Stearns' commentary. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. So as we've been talking about voting our values, which of course for Christians and conservatives is voting for truth in the best way available and possible, a lot of these battles are going to continue long after November 5th, regardless of who gets in office from presidential ticket all the way down. And one of those battles has continued to be for free speech. And so this headline coming from We the Patriots USA, RFK Jr. joins We the Patriots for historic free speech battle. So joining me now to discuss is Brian Festa, who is the vice president and co-founder of We the Patriots USA. So Brian, good morning, and tell us what's going on.
Good morning, Jenna. Well, what's going on, as you just noted there, is free speech continues to be under attack in America, and this time by both parties. Surprise, surprise. Anytime 80% of Congress gets together and does something virtually overnight, it raises an eyebrow, right? Because when does that happen in any other context? Well, that's what Congress did with the TikTok ban earlier this year. And it turned a lot of heads. Now, in the beginning, you had a lot of people from both sides of the aisle really supporting this and saying, you know, TikTok, it's owned by ByteDance, it's a Chinese company, they're spying on Americans, this is a national security threat, rah, rah, rah. It's like the Patriot Act all over again. You wave that flag of national security and you can run roughshod over all of our constitutional rights. Well, no, we saw through it. Mr. Kennedy, who's joined us in this lawsuit, has seen through it, as well as influencer Kristen Megyn Kelly, who's worked on a lot of work with We the Patriots USA, and she, you know, also is a plaintiff in this lawsuit. So, you know, we feel that it is imperative that we protect free speech for all Americans, and especially on social media, because these days, social media, as you know, is the modern public square.
Yeah, exactly. And social media needs to be protected. And I mean, and anywhere and any platform that constitutes a public square that we can engage in free speech and free exchange of ideas needs to be protected, especially since what we've seen with the Biden administration trying to discount, defend, or even hide some of their activities in terms of compelling some of these platforms to censor viewpoints that they don't prefer. I mean, those are things that are really big deals and will shape the future landscape of what First Amendment protection looks like, what free speech looks like for America. So where are you at in not only this lawsuit, but where do you think we're at in terms of free speech overall, depending on where we go as a country, Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump?
Well, this lawsuit was just filed a couple of weeks ago. So as you know, nothing's really happened yet, right? We're waiting for a response from the Justice Department, and we expect we'll get that shortly. But, you know, it's critically important right now at this juncture that we protect free speech because, you know, platforms like TikTok, love them or hate them. First of all, the concerns about national security, I mean, China, ladies and gentlemen, is spying on you regardless. If you think they need TikTok to spy on Americans, then I've got a bridge to sell you because this is absolutely not the means that they're spying on us. But regardless, even if there are dangers, TikTok is showing what – this is my personal belief of why they're trying to suppress it, okay? TikTok is showing – is one of the only platforms that I know of, video platforms, that is, on social media – that shows the real raw footage of what's happening on the ground in, for instance, North Carolina with the devastation there right now, for instance, in Israel. They just post things. They let people post things. It's unedited footage. And all the other platforms have played along with the government's, hide the ball game, shell game, whatever you want to call it, of, you know, look here, look there, or we'll only show you parts of this, or, you know, conforming with the mainstream media narrative to not show you the truth. So that's why I believe they're so adamant about shutting this platform down. And that's very dangerous because, as you know, again, love it or hate what's on TikTok, it's real, it's raw, it's the truth, and the First Amendment was designed to protect the truth. Now, we're a nonpartisan organization, so I can't comment on, you know, who's a better candidate, who you should vote for, whatever. But whoever gets into office, they need to be able to, you need to be able to, when you go into that ballot box, know that the person you're voting for is going to protect your free speech rights. Because without free speech, we're in full-on Marxism, you know, totalitarianism. This is no longer the United States of America. You take that, I mean, why do you think it's in the very First Amendment in the Bill of Rights? You take free speech away, and we have nothing, in my opinion. This is – the country's gone at that point. This is what China does. You know, ironically, you know, that's what happens in China is they don't allow you to go to certain websites, right? Certain websites are banned in China. You can't view certain things. Their internet is a locked internet. It's not a free and open exchange of information. And so, ironically – what Congress is doing in trying to protect us from China, supposedly, is make us more like China.
So do you think that there's more there's more on TikTok than there is on X in terms of some of these videos that you're describing? Or how does the X factor, no pun intended, play into this?
Well, you know, somebody, it's funny you mentioned that because I was at an event a couple of nights ago and somebody asked me the same thing. And said, well, what about X? What about Elon? He's showing the truth, isn't he? Well, you know, there still is censorship on X. We are on X and we are still censored there. so there's an illusion of truth. There's not full transparency there, in my opinion. And also, that is not a pure video platform in the way, yes, there are videos.
Right.
Obviously, you can post videos on X, but it's not like a YouTube or a Instagram or, in this case, TikTok. That's a pure video reel platform, you know, the short reels that everybody watches and most people get addicted to just scrolling through those reels.
Sure.
TikTok is a pure video platform. And I think that's what's dangerous to them, because it's not just like making a post with words. Hmm. They're more worried about you actually seeing what's happening. Because, again, if you turn on, you know, NBC, CNN, any of the, you know, major.
Yeah, those are all
media.
Curated content. And we're already out of time, Brian Festa, but you raise a really good and interesting point, which I would love to hear, and we'll have to ask members of Congress on the Republican side who want to ban TikTok their response to that. But in the meantime, if you'd like to support We the Patriots, you can go to WeThePatriotsUSA.org, WeThePatriotsUSA.org. Support their great fights there. And you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. And make sure you're listening tomorrow for On Demand with Jenna Ellis at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.